This is Peter Summon of Crashing Wayward, and you are listening to Thunder Underground.
Welcome to episode 397 of the Thunder Underground podcast. Trent here as always, and this week is going to be a good one because Pete Summit is returning to the podcast. Pete is the singer of Crashing Wayward. Crashing Wayward is a great band out of Las Vegas that's been around now for a few years. Their debut album came out in June of 2023 last year. Pete's now making his third appearance on the show, I believe. He's also been on with the drummer Sean McKee, and he's been on a couple times solo. So we're going to talk about some more stuff to do with the album, a forthcoming singles that they've got coming, and tons of other stuff. It's always a great conversation with Pete, so looking forward to jumping into this one very shortly. But first, I need to let you know who sponsors this podcast. DEB Concerts, a promoter based in the Tulsa area, that is continually bringing great rock acts to this part of the country. Whether it be bands like Saxon, Last in Line, Junkyard, Warrant, Lita Ford, Buck Cherry, Bisto Blanco, Kix, the list is great and long, and it continues. DEB always has a show on the books, and right now, the next one coming up is here coming very soon. April 24th, Faster Pussycat returns to the Venue Shrine in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Dime Store Riot will be opening the show. Dime Store Riot, of course, has been on this podcast. Well, the band itself has only been on once, but members of the band have been on multiple times. CJ has been on here 6-7 times. Paulette's been on 4-5 times. Huge fan of Dime Store Riot and, of course, Faster Pussycat, so hit up Venue Shrine to get ticket info. Hit up dbconcerts.com to be kept up to date on info from DB Concerts, and, of course, we continually bring you that info here. They also book the Roadhouse stage at Rocklahoma every year. Rocklahoma happens on Labor Day weekend every year. This year, the headliners for the Roadhouse stage that DEB booked will be Tom Kiefer headlining the pre-party, Winger, Vixen, and the Van Halen tribute band, the Atomic Punks, are going to be headlining each of those nights. Rocklahoma.com to check out the entire lineup, including the made headliners on the main stage and everything else going on. Tell DEB Concerts you heard about them right here on Thunder Underground. We've also got Sunset Tattoo, tattoo shop located in Midtown Tulsa. Their tattoos are done getting proper. They've got three artists on site, one of which is a female artist, and Sunset Tattoo is also native owned. You can call, text, or message ahead of time to set up an appointment to get in there to talk about what work you're looking to have done. They can help you put your ideas together, or they can just slap on you the idea you bring in ready to go. They also accept walk-ins. Hit them up on the socials. Sunset Tattoo on both Instagram and Facebook. There's tons and tons of photos from throughout the years that they specialize in all different styles. I've had work done more than once by Jake. I'm very happy with it. I know others that have had work done by him and are very happy with it. So I'm pretty positive that if you go in there, you'll be happy with the work you get done from Sunset Tattoo as well. So go in there and tell them you heard about him right here on Thunder Underground. Crashing Wayward, like I said up front, great band out of the Las Vegas area who released their debut album last June called Listen. Or I don't know if I'm supposed to scream Listen because it's Listen with an exclamation point. And, I mean, that's a great name for this album because that's what you need to do. One of the themes that always runs through when I talk about Crashing Wayward or when I've had Pete on or Sean on, we've always talked about the diversity and styles in this band's music. Which is cool because most of these guys, I mean, at least I know three of them for sure, come from a harder, like kind of a heavier rock background than Crashing Wayward does with most of their music. I mean, they have heavy stuff in there like Death on Holiday and this other stuff that we've talked about. You know, Breathe is not super heavy, but it's a, you know, banging rock song. They brought their styles together and melded them beautifully into this kind of conglomeration of hard rock, alternative rock, just flat out rock and roll, and even some pretty heavy stuff at times as well. Dynamic live band. You know, I haven't seen him personally, but I've watched videos online. You know, Pete is one of those front men that, you know, kind of captivate you. So I really hope that I get the chance to check him out live one day. They've also got music coming out on a sound, not on a soundtrack, like, well, on a soundtrack because it's in a movie that is just about to be released that we're going to talk about here in just a bit. Their label is RFK Media, which is owned by Ron Kill and run by Ron Kill. of course, of Kill, who has been on this podcast a couple times in the past. And that's something else that we talked about in most episodes that, you know, Pete has been a part of. Ron Kill kind of, you know, was the basis for bringing these guys in, you know, at least to his label and helping pushing them forward from what they were doing. They recently won, you know, an award for best new band in the Vegas area from the Vegas Rocks magazine. All kinds of stuff happening with Crashing Wayward right now. So let's jump into this and hear what Pete Summitt of Crashing Wayward has to say. This digital 45 of Stranger Days with a couple new versions, was this something you guys were kind of toying around the idea with, or did the record label kind of suggest it, or how'd that come about?
Yeah, I think it was a kind of more of an internal kind of wheels turning and how what we can do to do more about getting more attention on, you know, certain songs and for the album. So we were, you know, when you push to Spotify and you release an album all at once, you can really only push one song. So the idea was to take a single, repackage it, maybe do a couple of remixes, maybe add another song eventually. So that's where it kind of like, you know, snowballed into what it is now with the 45 digital release, was to keep the attention, for the band going and growing. So, that kind of just spawned the idea for the unplugged version. And want to throw out, applaud David Harris on that, because he took the reins on that and really made that happen, working with the remix and doing the production on that with the piano, the acoustic, and the strings. He did all the arrangement, as well as Mike Gillies, our producer, with the vocal production on that. But yeah, it was just something that we presented to the label. And said, hey, we got this idea. What do you think about it? And they were all behind it. So, yeah, that's where we are today.
I was going to ask you who did the piano on it. So you said, oh, David. Okay.
Yeah, I guess I ruined that question for you.
Oh, no. I mean, that's good to know. I mean, so I didn't know. A lot of musicians are, you know, multifaceted, multi-instrumentalists, you know, so that's something that you guys, I know there's keyboard effects, but was there piano on the album? In songs I'm not thinking about?
There was no piano. There was really no, I can't recall of where there's some keyboard either. There's okay. There's a lot of manipulation with the guitars. Mike Gillies did a good job with layering and manipulating tones and such with that. So that could, you know, possibly give that kind of feel of keyboards in there. But right. Yeah, it was just the five of us on that. But we are, you know, this band is very, again, like what you're saying, multifaceted. We have so many different, you know, backgrounds and inspirations, and it's all coming into one. And, you know, piano songs to me, especially with a ballad, it's kind of like a no-brainer, you know? So, when Dave, sent me over, hey, what do you think of this? I'm like, yeah, man, we got to do that for sure. You know, because I think we toyed around with it just as an acoustic, you know, with an acoustic guitar. And yeah, but he did the string arrangement on that and the piano. And yeah.
You know, stripping something down to acoustic, you know, might, you know, like you said, a ballad kind of lends itself to that. But obviously there's more, it focuses more on your voice whenever, you know, there's less going on, you know, than in the full plugged in version. Like, right. You know, did you... Like, I mean, it feels like there's more emotion, but maybe it's just because we're hearing your voice like more up in the front. Like, what do you think on that aspect of it?
So that full transparency, that vocal track is the same exact vocal track as what's on the original Stranger Days.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't realize.
Yeah. So, yeah, we talked about, well, do we want to redo the vocals on that? And I didn't want to. I felt like... it was all there, you know. Mike Gillies captured the essence of what I was trying to say. He got my vulnerability We worked on putting that song together, and he killed it on that. So I didn't want to, touch something that I felt was already there. It already had the, the foundation, to, put the strings and the piano and such to that, Right. So I think that's one of the things too, is I said before, songs, if you're able to break a song down into just the pure rawness of just an acoustic guitar and vocals, and it still sounds good, then you got a good song, You can't do that with every song. And Stranger Days is one of those very multifaceted, versatile songs, which you can.
Yeah. Well, I know when I first talked to you guys, I think Sean was with you, and you'd talked about how Ron Keel had really latched on to that song, and it's kind of how you guys started working with him. And then, I had him on, and he talked about it as well. Like, what kind of feedback did he give you on like this version or the Snakes of Russia remix version?
Well, I think that the acoustic for him was, we've had discussions about the song and how much Stranger Days feels to him. The lyrics, especially, he loves that I'm referencing Dolly, Bowie, and Ollie, and able to rhyme that and, with conviction and feeling. Right. So when he heard the acoustic unplugged version, yeah, he loved it, because as a vocalist, Ron is a musician, one of those multifaceted musicians, vocalist, songwriter. That was kind of like, he loved it. So that was really the only feedback I got from him, was like, it's amazing, it's great.
Yeah.
The Snakes of Russia mix is totally different. It's a little bit more abstract and avant-garde, for Ron Keel, but he stood behind us and what we were trying to do. That was something, I love hearing that darker version of what Stranger Days is. It's again going back to the multifaceted styles of that song and the band. Is like, let's see what this sounds like. It sounds like something straight out of a movie soundtrack. Why not? So it was something that was really fun, very experimental, and very proud of how that turned out. Joseph Snakes of Russia killed it on that one. So three very good versions of Stranger Days now. So.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that, a lot of times whenever a band just takes a song and has an electronic style artist do a remix, that it generally kind of just, it's just there. It might be cool, it might lose something, but like we've mentioned, like you mentioned, with the multifacetedness of your band and it making it a little bit darker, it just felt more natural that there was a version of Stranger Things like that. I mean, Stranger right. Things, sorry, Stranger Days.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, yeah, it's, I guess, how would I say it? It's, the songs are, I was actually just talking to my wife about, songs that I was writing or we have been writing, and I played her something that we've been working on, that we're always working on songs. And I played her something, just a snippet, and she said, well, what's that song about? And I really don't like to tell anybody what a song is about, because it's all subjective to how they hear it and what they envision, right? So now with the three different versions of Stranger Days, we have the amazing album version, we have the unplugged version, and this Snakes of Russia mix. It kind of leans to however somebody might actually, feel about the song objectively, subjectively. Maybe they always heard that song as a Snakes of Russia mix, or, that they lean to a more darker kind of direction to it, Yeah. So it's kind of, now you have that. And yeah, and it go, hey, listen, it should be on the Stranger Things soundtrack, actually.
Right. Yeah, especially that version would work very well,
Yes.
So were you just saying that you don't even tell your wife what something's about? Is that what you're alluding to?
I don't. I really don't. Not unless it's like, hey, it's like the song Tilly. I'm gonna let her know what that's about. That was about discussed that before, what Tilly was about. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's been a bit. So you know, feel free.
Yeah, yeah. It's about somebody who committed suicide within the circle of our band that was close to, you know, somebody in the circle of the band. So something like that is like, let's talk about that. That needs to be addressed and known. A lot of the songs I do write from a more lyrically, from a more personal kind of the way I, you know, I deal with, full disclosure, depression myself my entire life, you know. So I write a lot about that, but I also try to write about stuff in hope and love and how we all want to, you know, party, good times, all that. But I think a song, if I find out what a song is about and I had an idea about it as something else, then now I only see it as that, right? So if you take a painting, like a Georgia O'Keeffe painting, and, you know, you saw, you know, this beautiful landscape of, you know, New York City, but it's actually a flower, then now you're only going to see the flower when before you saw something that was like in your imagination, right?
Right.
So long story short, let's keep the imagination open.
Right.
You know, so that's what I like to do with the songs as much as I can. Unless they need to be addressed.
Right. Yeah, I guess a good musical analogy for that would be Johnny Cash covering Hurt, you know, because it's two people singing about the same words about two totally separate things, you know, and they both hit extremely well, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, bringing it back to the Unplugged one for a minute, like, is an acoustic show something you think Crashing Wayward would ever be interested in doing, like a live set, like fully acoustic? Or
I think that definitely do an acoustic set when we start playing arenas. So yeah. Hopefully, you know, break it down in the middle of the set. But we were kind of fooling around with doing some acoustic stuff here at the house, just shooting, you know, some of the songs just totally in the raw. Just, you know, Dave on guitar and me on vocals, or Stacy coming over and him on guitar and vocals, even Carl coming over. So that's what we've been doing. I've been posting it slowly on our social media, but it's been fun actually exploring the songs and doing some of the songs acoustically. So I would not rule out at some point, maybe we end up, you know, on the strip someplace and we just bust out an acoustic set or something, you know. Or maybe we do a 30-minute set someplace that's all acoustic. But I think we're open to that. Absolutely.
Is that something you've personally done in any of your previous bands? Or
I've done, you know, it's funny going back to turning songs, you know, most of these songs aren't written acoustically, right? So you have to kind of go back and transpose them back into, oh, how are we going to, you know, even vocally, how am I going to sing it? You know, where I'm projecting huge, how am I going to pull back a little bit and do this acoustically, right? So in my previous bands, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. It just wasn't done very well.
Okay.
You know, coming from a more hard rock and even more of a metal kind of bands that I was in previously, some of the songs just didn't lend to that. It's a little bit more difficult, where I think Crashing Wayward, it's totally different. Although we are a hard rock band, we're modern, we're alternative. I think that we can pull it off. Definitely.
I've never seen you guys live yet, but I've seen obviously live videos, and you know, you command the stage as a front man, but being in an acoustic setting like that is obviously, it's more, you're kind of open and raw. Would you embrace something like that? Or is that something, do you like the fact that, you know, I've got all this surrounding me and all this going on, you know, in the full plugged in set, and that's kind of daunting to think about, or no?
Right. Yeah, it's funny because sometimes I'm like, you know, I'm going to take it easy the show. I'm going to try to do something a little bit different. But once the music hits and it's like, I'm off, you know, it's this rush of an adrenaline. It's very hard to control. So doing that acoustically, it'd be very interesting to see how I do react on stage. I think it'd be cool to sit back one time and do it like, you know, maybe like Scott Weiland did with STP, and I'm sitting in a rocking chair, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not a rocking chair, but yeah, it would be interesting to see, because I am very animated, you know, and I really like to get in people's faces and really project a feeling and an emotion in all the songs. So, but again, acoustically, if it's pulled back and it's more raw and vulnerable, then that I don't have to be so animated, you know, and overcompensate with that and just kind of focus on the voice and connecting in that way. So it could be fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of, you know, Stranger Days and Tilly and all the songs on Listen, you know, the album's been out almost a year, and, you know, you've lived with these songs for longer than that because they were recorded, you know, longer ago than that. Like, now that you've got a little space from them, do they still resonate to you the same way as when you first wrote them? Or is it kind of like you mentioned earlier, like, does anything change with any of the songs over the past few years?
Funny enough, I don't listen to the songs and think, man, I should have done that different, or I could have done that different. I don't purposely listen to it, no pun intended, you know, often. I do, especially when we're rehearsing and stuff like that, I go back so I can, you know, really listen. And it still hits, you know. I think that the band, we wrote songs that are timeless. We had a producer, Mike Gillies, who was able to capture something and engineer it and mix it so that it will be timeless. That's what I really hope. At least that's how I hear it, you know, and some of these songs are just kind of, sometimes I still go back and I'll listen to it and go, wow, that it does hit me emotionally, you know. And I kind of, going back again, I've said it before, I don't listen to these songs from the eyes of, hey, that's me, I'm singing, I wrote that. I try to be somebody that's, you know, outside of myself as a audience, or, you know, somebody that's listening to it for the first time. And that's kind of how I listen to it. I don't ever kind of, you know, I want to be a fan. So would I be a fan of this band? I would, you know, so I would be listening to the album nonstop. I would buy it.
You're right.
I would download it. I'd buy the physical copy.
Absolutely. Well, I saw a couple of the songs, Disco Kills and Velvet's Dawn, are going to be in a movie that's coming out on Amazon Prime. I mean, that has to be, like, you know, satisfying to be able to hear your music added to another form of entertainment like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I actually went to the one of the premieres at a North Hollywood a festival. Sean McNabb, who stars in that movie, he brought those. He actually saw us play Viper Room one night and started talking with Stacey. Stacey sent the album and said, hey, I got to get a couple of these songs in the movie. And so I went out there and I saw the movie and got to hear it in the theater, which is pretty surreal and super cool. And I can't wait to, you know, stream it from home and hear it. So, yeah. And hopefully there's going to be a lot more of that. Like I said, we're working on new stuff as well. And I think we only scratched the surface on Listen, on people who have heard it. You know, we really want to start touring the world and get the music out there. And I think we can with that album for, you know, time to come. Again, thinking, you know, me believing that it is a timeless album. So,
speaking about the movie, is it something you can say, like, are the songs, like, featured in moments, or is it just kind of in the background or credits, or is it, you know, is that something you can talk about before? I mean, obviously, yeah, it's been out there, of course, since it's been a film festival, yeah. But yeah.
From memory, I think Disco Kills comes in as a scene is kind of changing and shifting. So you get a big, you know, okay, Disco Kills moment, and then it kind of fades into the background. Velvet's Drawn, I believe, is more of a, you know, kind of a quiet part in a bar scene. So it's kind of like the background a bit. Okay. It's a little bit more of an emotional part of the movie. So, yeah, but you can still hear it really good. You know, it's in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of Velvet's Drawn and Tilly and even Paper Airplane Heart, I mean, these are songs that could cross you guys over outside of the rock genre, I would think. You know, is that something you guys are interested? I mean, obviously you're interested in getting your music out there to anyone, but right, is that an avenue that you guys would embrace if, like, say, you know, a pop station started playing Tilly or something?
Well, in regard to Tilly, I think however Tilly gets heard, So if that's on a pop station and it gets heard, then I think that's very important. I think just the subject of that song, you know, needs to be heard. So whatever it takes to get heard, I think, you know, I think we're one of those bands right now where it's kind of hard to pinpoint, like, oh, what are they? You know, it's like, we're not a metal band. We're not just a hard rock band like AC/DC, but we are rock and roll, right? You know, that is what we are, but we're not afraid to touch on certain sounds. You know, if something sounds a little bit more poppy, hey, that's cool. Motley Crue put out several, you know, Too Fast for Love was very poppy, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's some poppy stuff on there, right? But that's a rock band, you know. Cheap Trick could be a little poppy. Yeah. But these are all people that inspired us, right? You know, so it's hard because, of course, I want to be heard however which way. But if it ends, if Tilly ends up on a pop radio or a country radio station, I'm all for it. But we're never straying away from being a rock band. So gotcha. That is what we are. But we'll explore different sounds and whatever the song is telling us it needs to be.
Touching on that a little bit, like, I mean, obviously, you know, my podcast like leans hard rock and metal, and you guys fit into that category. But since you, like you said, you can go the alternative route, whatever. Have you guys done press like in the past couple of years on stuff that's not, you know, maybe an alternative press type thing or stuff that's not predominantly harder rock? I mean, the outlets.
Yeah, I think right now it's kind of been more on the harder rock side of things right now. I know we've had some press and a killer review in Classic Rock magazine out of the UK.
Okay.
And that is, you know, the title's right there, Classic Rock, you know.
Right.
But they cover everything, you know, so which is how we made it in. But we haven't yet. I think we're more focused on, you know, finding our rock audience right now. You know, rock and roll is not going anywhere. I hate hearing that rock and roll is dead or that it's dead, you know. I mean, you can say that about any genre of music, right? Yeah. Rock and roll still draws people into shows. It's still like the highest grossing concert, or, you know, some of the highest grossing concerts every year. We are seeing new bands. You're seeing like, what is it, like Måneskin, Måneskin, stuff like, you know, the Struts. Lots of rock bands that are coming out. They might not be like the straight up, you know, like what we remember from the 80s and 90s, but it's rock and roll. I think if you go out and find it, you're going to find bands like us. You're going to find the Struts. You're going to find all the other new rock bands that are out there. So I think just people need to be open to that. And yeah, we're not straying from rock and roll.
Well, speaking of rock and roll, Death on Holiday is a song that I don't think we've ever really touched on the past few times you've been on. Like, can you speak a little bit about what you remember of the writing process or recording process of that song? Because that, you know, I love all the songs, but that one's always been one I kind of gravitated towards.
Yeah, that's that is definitely a favorite within the band as well, too. And especially when we play that live, it's like right in your face. In fact, we were debating on if that was going to be the song that we performed at the Vegas Rocks Magazine Award Show, which we ended up doing Mouth to God's Ear. But yeah, Death and Holiday was the first track that Dave and I wrote. So this goes back to pre-COVID, right? Right as, you know, COVID was coming to head. So that was the first song that we wrote. And it was like one of those moments where it's like, okay, we got something. We can do this. We can write together. And it's one of those, it's a political theme song, you know, it's leans to that kind of, you know, let's death on holidays. Let's send war and death on vacation. You know, let's end it, you know, is really what that is all about. So, and just the polarizing of where we are, you know. So going back to discussing on my theory of not discussing what songs are about, that is something that needs to be talked about, right?
Yeah.
You know, let's end the hate, let's end the wars, let's, you know, music is one of those universal languages that can do that. So hopefully, you know, this song gets heard at some point and can be that, you know, revolution music like Bob Marley or Peter Tosh or something, you know. It's one of those end hate and war anthems. So yeah, it was just that first song that we wrote, and it kind of just spawned Disco Kills, and then it brought Mouth to God's Ear and everything else that followed with Listen.
That's awesome. Excuse me. You mentioned, you know, performing the song. Was it, you guys won, was it Best New Rock Band in Vegas, or what was the?
We did. Yeah. Vegas Rocks Magazine awarded us the best new Las Vegas rock band.
Okay.
So, yeah. We performed there at that award show, which was awesome. Billy Gibbons was there. Rick Nielsen, Orianthe. Wow. Ricky Rocket, Kip Winger. So there was like a all-star jam at the end of the night doing Surrender. Okay. Keith Nelson came up and Ricky Rocket was playing drums and Kip Winger was actually singing. But it was an awesome night. Yeah. Five Finger Death Punch was there. They received an award. I forget what their award was, but it was an awesome night.
Very cool. Well, you'd mentioned a couple of times working on new music. Like, where are you guys at in the process on that? Is it kind of going to be what you guys did before Listen, where we get some singles before we get a full EP or album or anything?
Yeah, we have some singles. We actually have the next three. I believe we have three right now in line. I think what we got, the projected time frame is 8 weeks apart, and just kind of like waterfall some singles there. So we do have In Bed With My Head actually on our Instagram. I just did a little story. It'll be gone by the time this comes out, but I did a little sneak peek of In Bed With My Head, which is, that was probably one of the most raw, straight up forward vocal performances that I did. And Mike Gillies, we just wrapped that up and mixed it. He did a phenomenal job on that. That is like, to me, the only analogy I can give it or comparison is like Guns N' Roses Perfect Crime meets Nirvana breaking all their instruments in the studio. So it's like straight up in your face. It's like bringing back, you know, going back to, we are a rock band. That is what we do, and we can do it really well. But we have that coming out. We have a cover of Post Malone's Circles.
Okay.
Covering of that, which Mike Gillies produced and mixed as well. And that is, in my opinion, it's very like U2 Joshua Tree. So it's really cool. It's really vibey. Following that, we have another single coming out, Bullet for a Heart, which is a brand new song. And that is going to be another banger. And so that's going to be kind of like the start of the whole new work in progress that we do have. So okay. From there, we have a lineup of songs that we're ready to track. So we want to keep that every 8 weeks, a single or a video or something is coming out.
And is the idea to, you know, keep releasing them until you get enough to just make a collection for a new album? Or a second full album?
I think so. I think that's what we're kind of talking about right now. At least I would love for that to happen. We'll see. Get as much, just keep everything. You know, we're like living in a time where we can't let 3 years go by like the good old days. Like, you know,
yeah.
I mean, we gotta keep creating, or you unfortunately get forgotten if you just let it go too long, right? Or at least it feels that way. So we're trying to do our best not to do that. But at the same time, we're not rushing anything where we're going to put out something that's just, you know, contrived or not true to what we are, you know. So if we can't hit that eight week mark because the song isn't good enough or the production isn't good enough or whatever it is, then we're going to hold back. We're not going to put out something that is not truly authentic, Crashing Wayward. So we've been blessed with the ability and time to sit back and really create that second body of work, where it isn't us coming off the road and then it's like we're straight into the studio in 2 weeks and you got to write and you got to, you know, and then you hit the sophomore slump. No sophomore slumps for us. We're going to keep it going. So,
right. Well, being a guy that's been involved in, you know, music for a long time, you know, you've seen changes throughout the years and, you know, technology or like this, the way you're promoting music, do you like the way things, I mean, obviously you like the way things are going with Crash and Wayward, but do you like the way things are handled now as opposed to they were, say, 20, 25 years ago?
You know, if I had it my way, I'd go back to how it was 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I do. I do. Yeah. I think it's, you know, and for me too, I mean, 10 years ago, things were different in the way that you promoted a band, you know, it's like, I liked MySpace.
Yeah.
You know, I like the way that people discovered bands on MySpace. I think it's very hard now because everything is, you got to pay to play, you know, you paid advertisements everywhere, you know, everywhere you have to, it's like you have to pay or you don't get seen or you get squashed and you just become, you know, the needle in the haystack of new music, you know? So I think it's as much as we can kind of sit back and look at it and go, oh, wow, you can put it out there and you can be seen. It is to be seen is very hard still these days. I almost feel like it was easier when you were like grassroots, like in front of a venue that you're playing next the week, you know, next week, and you're handing out flyers and you're, you know, convincing people to come out and see you. Now it's kind of like, you know, that Andy Warhol, back then you had 15 minutes of fame, right?
Yeah.
Andy Warhol, now it's 5 seconds, if that, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's like there's so many bands pushing so many things at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, and you're trying to keep up with the Joneses now, even more so. It's like, now you're seeing, oh gosh, I got to do that. I got to, it's so hard. And I think that it's lost the mysteriousness. I would love to keep a little bit more of a mysteriousness to the band. I know people love and seeing, you know, behind the scenes stuff of the band, which we're going to continue doing. You know, we did a Coffee with Carl segment when we were on tour. That was kind of fun that we've posted. It's just Carl going to coffee shops and it shows him ordering the coffee and we made it fun. I think stuff like that is important, but I also think that mysteriousness to a band is, you know, to me, that is cool.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to see what I'm eating, you know, I don't know if anybody wants to see what I'm eating for breakfast or, you know,
right.
Stuff like that. It's like, I don't want to see Mick Jagger. It's like, he's cool. You know, Lenny Kravitz is cool. I don't want to see, you know, what they're eating for breakfast or, you know, their daily routine. I want some mysteriousness to it. So that's me though.
Yeah.
And some people might very strongly disagree with me, but you know, I want personal connection with our fans. I want to see them at the show. I want to talk to them. I want to thank them. I want to take photos with them. And I think that hopefully that's where we get back. We get back to that somehow. I know people are hungry for it.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, people start really coming out for that connection and buy the physical products and, you know, support live music and yeah. And see social media for what it is. It's a good thing. There's a lot of goodness in it, but there's also a lot of, you know, things you got to be careful with about it as well.
Yeah. From a fan standpoint, I love, you know, being able to, you know, like you said, someone drops a reel or a story or something, you know, you get like a 30-second clip of like what's going on in a band's life that you like. You can get this stuff daily, but I also miss the being excited about the fact that, oh, Pantera's got a new home video coming out and I get to, you know, sit down and watch their backstage antics for the next 90 minutes, you know,
right.
That's kind of lost in this day and age, you know?
Yeah, totally. And even getting people just to click something like, hey, pre-save right here. It literally takes boop, boop.
Yeah.
And getting them to do that is like, are you kidding me? It's just like, just everything is so desensitized and so easy for, you know? So it's really kind of like, come on, people.
Yeah.
Let's support art. Let's support people. I mean, we're trying to do something that is like as real and authentic, you know, not everybody's going to love us, you know, but we're putting our souls out there. So, and if you do love it, support it.
Well, changing gears slightly off of you guys, a band that I would think fans of that would like you guys is Jane's Addiction. And I know you've spoken to me in the past that that's one of your influences. And I just recently saw that Dave Navarro is healthy again or healthier again. And they're about to record, you know, they're writing music for the first time with the original members. I mean, is that, I assume, something that excites you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's awesome. I think, you know, a huge fan of, you know, Jane's Addiction. I think that they were kind of like, you know, going back to the Strip, you know, like they were like the alternative, but they were like so cool that they were, you know, Axl Rose was a fan, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it was just, I think that we need to have that kind of like, I hope that they bring it like they did with, you know, their earlier stuff, you know, nothing shocking or something like that. And it's just, you know, bring back some of that really artsy kind of stuff, you know? I think the Cult, going back to like, I think we spoke of the Cult before. I'm a huge Cult fan, you know, the last album, they kind of went back to a little bit more of a earlier death cult kind of love Dreamtime kind of vibey feel, which I thought was cool. But yeah, I'm definitely excited about Jane's Addiction, and I hope they bring it hardcore. I would love to, I haven't seen them live, so I'd love to see them live this time around.
Yeah, same here. That's one that's always eluded me. I mean, I like the idea that, you know, they're back recording music, but I really think that, you know, they're not, I don't think they're going to get in Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year, but I really think they should be there because of what you mentioned, you know, about the fact that they kind of bridged a gap between alternative and metal, where metalheads were listening to them, you know, and like, I think that probably pushed, you know, some of their fans into liking a little bit heavier music as well.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think we need more bands like that, you know, that bridge those gaps.
Yeah. And which is what you guys are hopefully doing, right?
I hope so. Yeah. I think so. I mean, that's our intention. You know, bands like Alice in Chains or Soundgarden, when they first started, going back again, that is a rock and roll band, you know, that, yeah, sure, it got labeled as grunge, but those guys were, they all came from, you know, like Layne Staley was really into like what we would call hair metal, you know, he was doing stuff like that. And it just became a more raw rock and roll. I love raw rock and roll. Back in Black, you know, all AC/DC, that's raw rock and roll. The Cult, Electric, you know, stuff like that. That's the stuff that I love to hear, just like in your face, you know, rawness. But we definitely need to have more bands like that and people that are more open to like, you know, not just be like, well, I only listen to metal. And if you do, then that's great. But there's, you know, there's a lot of metal to cover. So hopefully you're listening to everything, you know, all the different genres of metal or something, you know, but you can find something great in, you know, in hopefully you can find something great in what we're doing and a bridge that gap from, you know, metal to rock or, you know, rock to pop or whatever, you know? So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about that.
You mentioned the singles that'll be coming out, and like, obviously I assume there's going to be more live shows. Like, what can we look for you guys, you know, for the rest of the year outside of these singles?
So we're throwing dates around. So hopefully we're going to be on the road here soon. Hopefully we'll have something to announce in May or June. We took the last few months off so we could focus on the release of these singles. We have a few videos we're working on and need a shoot for that as well too, getting back into the studio. So hopefully by May and June, we're back on the road. I know there's discussions of us getting overseas, which I really hope happens, because that I think is just like a huge audience waiting to happen, for us. You know, if we can get to Asia or, and Europe, of course. But more talks, you know, getting to the Midwest and maybe Northwest. So I don't know. We're just kind of like, it's an open calendar for us right now. We're just piecing it all together. But again, hopefully we'll announce something very soon for May or June.
Right on. Well, I always appreciate you coming on the show and always have a great time talking to you. And thanks again, man.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. Just let me know. I'm always happy to be on with you.
There you go, Peter Summit of Crashing Wayward. A huge thank you to Jody Best of Best Bet Promotions for her continued support throughout the years of this podcast. We're nearing 9 years, and Jody Best has been a part of probably 8 years of those at least. Crazy to think about. I need to actually look back on that before this 9th anniversary episode coming up here in a few weeks. But back to subject at hand, a huge thank you to Peter Summit for taking some time out there to sit down and talk to me on Zoom once again. Like I said up front, he's been on here a couple other times. And actually, in the grand scheme of the numbers of this episode, it's been not that long ago. He was on episode 372 with Sean McKee, also of Crashing Wayward. and then on episode 382, and then now on episode 397. So that's three episodes in the past 25 episodes. Pretty crazy. But that's because in the past year, I was gone a lot, and there was always a few, you know, chunks of time that I missed out on episodes. So there was less episodes in the past year. That's why it looks like when you look at the list, Pete's been on a lot recently, but it's been three times in the past 13 or so months, which is pretty cool. And in turn, I've become a pretty big fan of this band from listening to their music a lot when I first had them on. And then, of course, continuing the conversations when Peter comes back. Like I said up front, they're on RFK Media. Ron Kill has been on here a couple of times. If you're a first-time listener, Stacey David Blades has been on here. No, excuse me. He has not been on here. I don't know why I just said that. What I was trying to say is that he was formerly a member of LA Guns, and two members of LA Guns have been on here. Tracy Guns and Phil Lewis has been on here twice. We've also had on Glenn Hughes of Deep Purple a couple times. Frank Cannon of Tesla four times. Jack Russell of Great White was on recently. Mark Kendall of Great White was on a couple times years ago. Brian Wheat of Tesla. John Karabi, formerly of Motley Crue and now of the Dead Daisies. Brian Tishy, formerly of the Dead Daisies now. And of course, formerly of a lot of great things like Ozzy and Whitesnake. Speaking of Whitesnake, Adrian Vandenberg was on here just a few weeks ago. That's one of the coolest things I've been able to say a while. And one thing maybe even cooler to that than me is I get to say is that Living Color was on here the week after that, just about a month ago. Corey Glover and Vernon Reid were on here for the first time, and that was an unbelievable honor for me. Also recently, Ricky Bedlock of Lynyrd Skynyrd was on here. I mean, how cool is that? I can't even explain to you how fun that one was. And for Lynyrd Skynyrd, Damon Johnson's now been in Lynyrd Skynyrd a couple times. He's been on this podcast six times, talking about all his stuff throughout the years, being in Brother Kane, Thin Lizzy, Alice Cooper. He was a part of the band Slave to the System. All kinds of great stuff. And now he's a member of Lynyrd Skynyrd, filling those unfillable shoes of Gary Rossington. But we've also had on members of Avatar, Megadeth, Testament, Three Doors Down, Hellstorm, Shooter Jennings. The list is great and long, so dig back through all these previous episodes. Wherever you're listening now, like, subscribe, follow so you don't miss future announcements. Hit us up on all the socials, thethunderunderground.com. You can listen directly there, and you can also find the links for all the socials there. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Coming up next week, Keith Wallen, the guitarist of Breaking Benjamin, will be on here for the first time. And that's a really fun one. I can't wait to hear that one again. So looking forward to getting that one out to you. And then, of course, we've got more announcements coming soon. Episode 399, obviously. And then the 400th episode will fall right around the 9th anniversary of this podcast. So it might just be a big blowout extravaganza. We'll have to wait and see. But in the meantime, like I said, look forward to Keith Wallen. Check out some of these previous ones from In Theory, Ricky Medlock, Living Color, and Adrian Vandenberg, and Mirath. And once again, a massive thank you to Best Bet Promotions, Sunset Tattoo, DEB Concerts, and Peter Summit. And until next time.
Thunder Underground, y'all.